The following program is transcribed. Ask the sports world.
Was Ty Cobb a better player than Babe Ruth?
How do you get to be a big league manager?
Who invented two-platoon football?
How long will Ben Hogan be the top golfer?
Could Joe Louis have licked Rocky Marciano in his prime?
Yes, those are the questions the sports fans of the nation are always asking. Those are the things they want to know in this age of increasing sports audiences. And too often they can't get the answers. They never get to speak to the men who know those answers. So they write to us here at NBC and ask us. Now, we're going to get you those answers straight from the men who have the facts. We asked the sports world, and the man who asked them was our assistant director of sports, Lindsay Nelson. So here to ask the sports world for you is Lindsay Nelson.
Whenever you want so-called inside football information, the best thing to do is ask a coach. And of course, there's a simple reason for that. A football coach makes the sport his life's work. If he doesn't know most of the answers about rules, systems, development of young players, and everything that makes the game of football what it is today, well, he's in the wrong profession. So, to answer some of the many football questions which you've piled up in our NBC Sports Mail, we ask a coach whom we know is in the right profession. He was a great college star at Fordham University, a top professional player with the New York Giants, and is now back as head coach at his alma mater, where he's serving notice that the Fordham Rams are on the rise again. He's head coach Ed Donowski, and we'll ask him some of the questions that we know the fans want answered. Coach Donowski, when Fordham's football team, so great in the 1930s, fell from the top ranks in the nation, was that a result of planned de-emphasis? And if so, do you think the results were justified?
Yes, Lindsay, it was definitely a planned de-emphasis on a part of Fordham. The authorities at Fordham decided they didn't care for the so-called big-time football. They cut down on the number of scholarships, the type of boy we could get in, and also on the schedule making. Therefore, during the war, Fordham dropped football for 3 years, and when Fordham decided to play football again after the war, they decided to go on a de-emphasis program. And that's where we've been ever since. But gradually, with the new president, Father Rector, at Fordham, we're building up slowly, but never again will we be a top-notch football team.
Well, Ed, that brings up another question that many of our fans have asked, and we'd like to ask you, what are the problems you face in what might be called the re-emphasis of Fordham football?
Well, a major problem of any college, I think, is recruiting of football players. As the football season draws to a close this year, there'll be many scouts all over the country, alumni of all kind, offering to outstanding high school boys scholarships, the laundry money, tuition, even as far as cars, to induce this boy to go to college. And if you do not come up with some of these top-notch high school boys, Lindsay, you're just not going to come up with a good football team. And I think that goes for every team in the country. After coaching 8 years at Fordham, I know I've been missing these top football players. Therefore, we're just a middle road team.
Well, Coach, if one of your players were qualified, would you urge him to aim at a professional football career? What benefits might he get from it?
Lindsay, I certainly would have my boy take on professional football if he was capable, but with this in back of his mind, that he'd only stay in professional football 4 or 5 years. And with the money he earned in professional football, I would urge him to go on to college, to go on to receive his master's degree or doctor's or whatever he's working for, to prepare himself for later life instead of trying to stay in football too long.
Thanks very much, Coach Ed Donowski of Fordham University. A few weeks ago, we asked some golf questions of Jimmy Demerit, one of the most popular and capable of the men professionals today. Well, we've been very forcibly reminded since then that women, too, have a big stake in the game of golf. More and more of the distaff side have turned to the links, both as spectators and as players. They have a few questions of their own to ask. And to get the answers, we got hold of one of the greatest women golfers of all time, and that, of course, is Patty Berg, a girl who has won practically every honor known to female golfdom, who has hit the greens with the best of them, has served her country during the war, and who conducts golf clinics all over the nation. We knew that she could answer the questions all our women listeners wanted to hear, so we asked Patty Berg, how did you happen to get started in golf?
Well, that's quite a long story. I remember when I lived back in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I was a very young little kid back there. I played on the 50th Street football team. And I was a little tomboy, you might put it, and about four doors from me lived Bud Wilkinson, now coach of Oklahoma University. And we played a lot of football together, and I guess I tore so many clothes that my mother decided I better get into a little easier sport. So I went into speed skating, which is a major sport up in the state of Minnesota. And well, I didn't last too long there because, one, it was too cold. Two, I lost too many races by a nose. I have a very small nose. And the third thing is, and the most important, I wasn't any good. So then I decided that they decided that maybe I'd like golf. My daddy's always played a lot of golf, my brother too. So I got into the game of golf, and I'm certainly very happy that I've had it not only as my hobby, but also as my livelihood.
What do you think accounts for the increasing interest of women in golf?
I believe that one is the participation. Women want to participate today. You know, usually they're the spectator, but here's one place that they can be the performer in the game of golf. The second thing is that there's no age limits. No matter how young or how old you may be, you can have this game of golf for a lifetime hobby. The third thing I find that a lot of people take it up, especially women, because it helps build their health. And I believe also, too, that any time that you have to move from city to city, if your husband's transferred or something, it always gives you an opportunity to make and build friends rather quickly. I think that President Eisenhower has done a tremendous amount for the game of golf because of his great interest in the game. And the last thing, which is certainly very important, is the great advancement in the equipment. I know that a few years ago that the women would use the husband's clubs when they got old, too old for the husband, and the clubs were usually too long and too heavy. But today, the manufacturers have built wonderful clubs for the women today.
Why isn't there any international golf tournament for women comparable to the Ryder Cup for men?
I feel this way. We do have the Women's Curtis Cup team, which is an amateur team by the USGA, and also the Walker Cup for the men. But for the Ryder Cup, which is a professional team, we did have in 1951 a weather vane team. We went over to England in 1951 and played against the British women golfers over there. And that is the only professional team that I've ever known is the weather vane team.
Who is your toughest competitor in the game today?
Well, I feel this way, that the greatest competitor that we have and also our greatest player, besides the greatest woman athlete, is Babe Zaharias. She not only can hit it a long ways, but she also is, well, she has wonderful finesse around the green. She's a great chipper and a great putter. And one of the greatest competitors that I've ever known. She never gives up. Oh, boy, what a great athlete.
A month ago at the Polo Grounds in New York City, a young man intent on winning the World Heavyweight Championship went into the ring against Rocky Marciano, the title holder. He didn't succeed. Roland Lestarza, the young man in question, was knocked out in the 11th round, but not before he had won at least five rounds from the heavy-handed heavyweight champion. Lestarza took his defeat with all good grace. He said that Marciano was a great champion and he should know. And so, by way of finding out how it feels to be hit by the greatest puncher in the ring today, we ask Roland Lestarza, the heavyweight contender, how does it feel to be hit by Rocky Marciano?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I didn't even feel it at the time. I did know I went down and that I got up, and it's a funny feeling. I guess it's the first time I had ever been stopped, and I wasn't hurt at all, I'll tell you that much. It's just like, you know, it was quick and painless.
You were one of the few college-trained men ever to fight for a world boxing championship. Do you believe that college training is a hindrance to success in the ring?
Well, some have said that it's a hindrance, but I don't believe so. I think that a college education, or any education for that matter, will help a fighter live better and will let him know that he has to do things right, whereas someone else may not know it.
What kind of a fighter will take the title away from Rocky Marciano?
Well, I think my type of fighter is the only type who can take it away from him, because you have to, well, you certainly have to keep out of his way. It's not too good to trade punches with him unless you can get away with it. And you have to be faster than he is, which I know I am. And you have to know how to box a bit. You can't just slug alone with Rocky. You have to box him, too, in order to win.
Do you want another chance at the title?
Oh, yes, I certainly do intend to try again. Of course, that's not up to me. I have to wait and see what they want to do about it. But I believe I will get another shot at the title.
Thanks very much, Roland Lestarza. Track and field is the oldest of sports. Men have always run and jumped and thrown things. Each succeeding generation has done just a little better than the preceding one. Until today, the target is the 4-minute mile, the 7-foot high jump, and the 60-foot shot put. To answer some of the questions we receive on field events, we ask Bernie Mayer, an outstanding athlete at NYU, who is still making headlines with the New York Pioneer Club. We ask Bernie Mayer, who will throw the 16-pound shot 60 feet?
Well, excluding myself, I would say Parry O'Brien.
How does it feel to throw the shot 57 feet and yet fail to make the U.S. Olympic team, which happened to you in 1952?
Well, it's an odd question. It felt rather bad at the time, but it was my best performance. It was a heck of a good competition between the four of us, and I just can't feel too badly about it.
As a top amateur athlete, do you find it difficult to keep in shape without interfering with your regular occupation, which I understand is teaching?
Yes, teaching does take up a lot of my time. Then I spend a lot of time with the Amateur Athletic Union. I spend a lot of time at various coaching clinics and coaches' meetings, and I'm trying to learn as much as I can about the complete sport track, and it does take from my practicing periods.
In your opinion, what is the greatest performance a shot putter will finally attain?
Oh, I don't think I can actually set a limit. I honestly feel that somebody my size with Fuchs's strength and Parry O'Brien's speed, the combination of all, might get the shot out as far as 65 feet. It's certainly something to look forward to.
What factors are behind the United States' superiority in shot putting? How long will such superiority last?
Well, I hope it'll last indefinitely. As far as what is in back of it, I feel that our superior methods of training certainly are in back of it. I think we're a little more advanced than the European countries in all phases of our training.
Parry O'Brien of USC, the present world record holder, uses a technique completely different from anyone else. Instead of facing the direction in which he propels the shot, he does just the opposite before he lets fly. Will his style affect other shot putters, yourself, for example? Or do you think styles must be adopted to the individual?
No, I definitely feel his style will affect shot putting. My style is similar to his. I don't have the back strength nor the thigh strength to get down as low as he does. However, his form used today is a natural evolution of a combination of Jim Fuchs's style plus Charlie Fonville's style from Michigan, two world's record holders. He combined the best points of the two and evolved his own style.
Thanks very much, Bernie Mayer.
And that's the last answer we have time for today. We hope it took care of some of the sports questions that have been bothering listeners and fans. And each week at this time, we'll be back to do your talking for you to the men who know the answers in sports. Yes, next week again, be with us when, on your behalf, Lindsay Nelson will ask the sports world.
The preceding program was transcribed.
Hear College Quiz Bowl tonight on the NBC Radio Network.